Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Gene Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with
the new season. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. We're back with a brand new season. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a wait, and I love films. As Roy T. Bennett once said, pursue what catches your heart, not what catches your eyes. But on the other hand, do go see Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves because it's really delightful. It's actually fantastic. Fair enough. Good point, Roy T. Bennett. Well done. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Sharon Stone, and even Cred Blambles. But this week, it's the brilliant comedian, actor, writer, novelist, and movie star, it's Andy Osho. This week, you can get the full season 1 of Shrinking on Apple TV+. You can also get, at this point, the first 4 episodes of Ted Lasso Season 3, also on Apple TV+. Watch them. Love them. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes of chat with Andy. We talk about secrets. We talk about beginnings and endings. You also get the whole episode uncut and as a video. Check it out at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So I've missed you. Hope you're all well. Thanks for hanging around. I've started with this episode because Andy Osho is amazing. I love this episode so much. She was a brilliant comedian, started out around the same time as me. She left comedy, or certainly took a break from it, to go on an amazing journey. She made huge decisions for her mental health and for her life and for her spiritual growth. You'll hear all about it on the episode. I think she's fucking brilliant. She's an incredible actor. She's a movie star. She's all of it. Anyway, this episode's amazing. We recorded it on Zoom. It was so lovely to talk to her. And I really think you're going to love it. So thank you and welcome back. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 242 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a writer, a novelist, a screenwriter, an award winner, a stand-up comedian, an international liberer, a woman, a hero, a legend, a rising star, and a soaring heights. She's here. She's real. Can you believe it? I can. I'm looking right at her. She's on the show at last. Please welcome. It's Andy Osho.
Oh my gosh. What? I mean, can that be the whole show? Just that intro. That's like. It. And then like. Just like, we'll send out a PDF of a list of films or something. Like that. I mean, I'm done.
That's not a bad idea. A little PDF. I mean, no one cares about the film bit. They just want the intro. How are you, well, Andy Osho?
I'm very well. Thanks, Brett Goldstein. How are you?
I'm good. Now, I'm in LA. You're in England. We're recording this on Zoom. I've got so many things to ask you, big things, because you, if I may say, are fascinating. Oh. There, I said it.
Oh, wow, it's out there.
Yeah, the truth is out. And I sometimes think of you, if I may, sort of like you're the George Harrison of the UK comedy scene. Like, I think you started in comedy, you like soared away, huge news started TV, you know, and then it looked like you left it all to go on a spiritual quest. And I love that. And I'm so fascinated by it. And and then I suddenly saw you in a horror film, an American horror film, turned up with a perfect American accent. And I was like, wow, what's happened? Went on a spiritual quest, came out a horror icon. What? Can we talk about this? And then you write the novel. I mean, who are you? What a life.
Right. So I'm kind of... But there's actually three of us. That's the truth of it. Yeah, I'm one of three triplets. I mean, that's how triplets come anyway, isn't it? But that's really funny that's what it looked like from the... Yeah,
I haven't discussed it. I haven't checked with other people if they agree with this.
Yeah.
But I was always fascinated because you were so... I'm interested in people who are naturally very good at something and do very well, who then decide it's not making them happy. I assumed it didn't make you happy or something was missing in it. And it's so interesting.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, I started as an actor and then I said to myself, like, I wasn't getting any love kind of from the industry. I mean, I was a bit. I was getting auditions, but I wasn't, like, landing any roles. So I was like, what can I do that will... let me have a bit more control, that I'm not waiting for someone else's approval before I can do the thing that I love. And then that's how I got into stand-up. And I think when I started, I don't know about you, but I felt like it was a bit of a game. I was enjoying the game of it. Like, ooh, that joke didn't work. What can I do to make it work? Ooh, that worked. And then I moved that. And like, it was almost like this really interactive puzzle almost. So I really enjoyed it in the early days. And I remember the first time I got paid and I was like, this has changed everything. Because now there's a contract.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not about my puzzle.
You can't lose the game.
No, exactly. Exactly.
No, it's like I've been paid to win this.
Yeah. And I remember going around going, oh, you know, I think that's me. I'm out. This is like about 6 months in. And you know, the people was like, you're not. You clearly love it. So you know, you're not gonna tap out now. And then I kept going and then it just blew up. Like Mock the Week was the first thing that they were really the first people that backed me in any meaningful way that sort of got me out there. And then it's almost like that was the endorsement that other producers needed. Oh no, we were going to have you on our show before.
But we always said.
So then it just sort of snowballed. And then I realized only recently that it was actually only a couple of years that I was doing all the panel shows and the Apollos and all that. And then around about the start of 2012, so my first Mock the Week was beginning of 2010. And then around about 2012, I was like, man, I'm unhappy.
Oh, wow.
And that was probably because that year I did my second live at the Apollo. I did, you know, a couple of Mock the Weeks probably and, you know, a bunch of other stuff. But I've never been more... that was the worst bout of depression I've ever had. And I have had it before. And so I did basically what you said. And I took myself away and just had a little think about what do I really want? Because there was this big chasm opening up between who I was on stage. I even refer to her in the third person sometimes of like who that person is and who I am. The gap was getting bigger. I didn't dress like her. I didn't talk like her. I didn't... Yeah. Do you know what I mean? She was just someone not only did I not recognize, but I didn't have the energy to be her anymore. Do you know what I mean?
Can I ask you, that was that like in terms of your sort of consciousness of it, was it like you were just busy and then like one thing happened and you were like, fuck, I'm unhappy? Or was it actually you were feeling consciously unhappy for a long time?
It was more like it was a growing sense of something, but I didn't name it. And then actually I was on a course and it's sort of like a well-being course kind of thing. And I came out of the other end of it. Everyone else was kind of euphoric at the end of this thing. And I was literally in despair. Yeah. And to the point where the facilitator kind of called me in and he was just like, what's up? Because, you know, he was so used to people leaving this place like weekend program in quite a sort of altered state and just like different perspective on the world. And I was just like, I think I might just... I think I might be done with living, you know. So it was like, it was really bad. I had to stop working actually, and I had gigs booked in, and actually I was gonna do. You remember that? They don't do it anymore, but that Channel 4 Great Ormond Street, A Night of a Million Comedians. I was booked in to do that. I was like, I can't do it. It was like everything out of the diary because I was in such a.
wasn't like I just, it wasn't a hard, abrupt stop. It was more like it sort of petered out. So I came to the States, or went to the States, should I say. I went to the States and I still did some, I was still doing gigs, but I had this feeling like I was coming, I was running out of road as far as that was concerned. Because you know what it was, Brett? It was, I realized that I, there was more to me than I was being, I don't want to say allowed to do, but there was more to me than I could share through just being a stand-up. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like creatively, there was more that I had to offer. So I just felt like that's the end of that journey for now. It's not like I'll never go back. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But it felt like at that point, there wasn't any more that I could do. I mean, I was talking to, you know, Luke Tilson. He said, well, you basically clocked the game and then you got out. And it's kind of, it sort of did feel a bit like, it's like, what more can I, because no one, you know, at that time, and even still, it was very difficult for somebody like me, a woman, a black woman, like that, to get their own vehicle. And so you ended up in loads of other people's vehicles. But there's only so many of those that you can do before you're just, it can be quite unsatisfying. Do you know what I mean? Like constant, the whole panel show carousel can get quite sort of frustrating if you feel like there's more that I could give than is I'm being allowed to sort of express.
Can I give you a theory that I have about?
Yeah, please.
Well, I wonder if, particularly because you were sort of picked young, as it were, as in fairly new, and it was like, oh, she's good, we should put her on TV, that often TV comics, what happens in sort of mainstream TV comedy, I think, is that comedy personas become two-dimensional because it's much easier to do in 5 minutes, in 3 minutes, in a one night. It's like, here's the grumpy one, like Jack D, he's the grumpy one. There's Michael McIntyre, he's the posh one. Like, it's just you reduce that person to a sort of one attitude that is funny and great, but on TV they become often reduced to a kind of bite-sized Mr. Man character, you know what I mean?
That's good.
And if you were early on funneled into this, you were a person and then you were like, no, you're a TV comic, can we reduce you to you're this and that's it?
Yeah.
And maybe that's why you felt, this isn't me, I want to express all this stuff. And I do believe stand-up is an art form where you can express anything, but not in broad mainstream TV, it's almost impossible. It's so rare to, I can't really think of an example where you go, that was a really complicated, you know what I mean? Like a really fascinating character we just met. It's more like, that was the angry one. That was the silly one. That was the, you know what I mean?
That's really, really wise. And yeah, I can really see that as well. And I used to have these sort of fantasies, Daniel Kitson type fantasies that, oh, one day maybe I could just write a show about what I'm thinking and feeling and not be censored or feel any. And then I go, no, you got to, you know what I mean? Because I'd almost gaslit myself into thinking, I have to do all these things. I have to do the panel shows. I have to do all these silly kind of panel show pilots that were really sometimes quite not humiliating, but like not gratifying really in any way. Yeah. Sort of. Because I told myself, I had this belief that that was what I was supposed to be doing. Do you know what I mean? But actually, taking myself away made me realize, oh, I can do whatever I want. There might be a cost, as in, you know, financially or in terms of, I don't know, career progression or status or whatever. But sometimes for your mental health, that cost is, in fact, always for your mental health, that cost is worth paying.
Yeah. Amazing, Andy. So can you tell me a bit about the positive second half of that story? Of like going on your spiritual quest, like at what point were you like, oh, I'm starting to feel like this is
better.
And like how you go on.
So I guess those years in LA, and I was sort of coming back to the UK, and I got myself a little kind of career coach who was talking me through my experiences, because it was very, it looks like I went off, you know, and then came back and got all these like cool fun roles in things, but actually there was a lot of soul searching, a lot of like, I remember having like Skypes with my mom of like, and saying to her, I know I'm meant to be here, but I don't know why, but more tears than that. And she, you know, she's desperate for me to come home, because it's just like, well, if you don't know why you're there or whatever, if you haven't.
And you're crying.
Yeah, maybe that's not where you should be, but I just knew that I should be. And actually, looking back, what I realized the time was about shedding things, that shackles basically that were holding me back creatively, finding my confidence to call myself an artist. I would have been embarrassed to say that at the time that I left. You know what I mean? And like explore the things that were creatively interesting to me rather than what I felt like I should be doing, because that was the opportunity that had been placed immediately in front of me. And yeah, just releasing myself from any burden to be something that I thought other people thought I should be.
Yeah.
So coming home, as it were, in a sort of literal sense, but figuratively as well, it wasn't like I was flush with work when I was in the States. And in fact, I did work in the UK to sort of kind of bankroll the experience.
Right.
But at the end of it, I realized that what I'd gained is a real deep confidence and belief in myself and my ability to do the things that I knew would light me up rather than doing things that I felt like I should. And that was a bigger gift than if I had worked loads, actually.
Wow. You're a fucking hero. do you have a sort of practice? I mean, I guess what I'm asking is, like, do you have like a routine? Because you seem, you know, you seem wonderful, as in happy and positive and you seem in a very good place. Is it constant work to be in that place? As in, do you do things like, I meditate every morning, I work out, like, what do you have a thing, or are you just generally, I feel much better?
I think to say I have a practice would be generous to myself. It's more like, but you know, someone said something to me once about, you know, just beginning again. Because people, like, if they want to, say they want to start working out, they'll go and then it might peter out and they'll think, oh, I failed. I failed at going to the gym because I'm no longer going. You just begin again. And that is what it is. Yeah. It's not necessarily a constant. So my practices are all beginning again. I start meditation and I go, this is it. This time, this is the one. This is where you catch me doing it every goddamn morning. And then after a month, I'm out. And then I start again and I forgive myself for that falling. And then I kind of think of other things as meditation, like I journal and that.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So as a writer, I realized that actually maybe sitting still with my own noisy brain isn't the best way for me to meditate. And I've realized that maybe writing, but doing it in a conscious way, maybe that can be my meditation. And as long as you're bringing consciousness to it, then it can be a form of like quietening the brain and or listening to the, observing the movement of the mind. And that's really what meditation is. It's not about sitting in silence or your brain going quiet. Yeah. That's impossible because of just biomechanics or whatever, but like, or neuromechanics, but like just observing it, that can give you just that slither of distance that you can be with your thoughts rather than be them. So that's, so that's the practice. Well-being, you know, like I don't drink as much as I used to. I like a glass of wine every now and again, but not caner basically like I have been. And eating well, you know, all the cliches, but they like accumulatively, they make such a difference. I feel like I'm observing for my mental health. It just makes a huge difference. And I've seen the cost of not looking after myself in those respects. Yeah. So that's really all it is. It's a personal thing of like, does this cost me to not look after myself in these areas? If you can get away with it, then please have at it. Live your life on my behalf. Yeah. You know what I mean? But like for the most part, because of the way humans are built, we can't really, not for a long period of time.
Andy, Oshay, I forgot to tell you something and it's so annoying. Because
Oh God, as long as it's not something silly like I've died or something like that, that'd be
annoying. Well, it actually...
Oh, don't. Oh, my God,
it's
I eat so
healthily. It's such a shame
you've
come so far. I know, and you meditate, you journal, and you work out, but you've died.
Oh, God. I thought if I made noises over you saying it, it wouldn't be real, but it is real.
Dead.
Ugh.
Dead.
Ugh. Hate it.
How did you die?
Well, I don't think it'll be a health-related thing, and here's why. I think it'll be, I'm clumsy in a way where the thing escalates really quickly. Like, right. I could be at one end of the bathroom and drop something and somehow it ends up in the toilet. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't have a lot of accidents, but they're always like kind of low-key spectacular like that. Like, literally, just before we started recording, I tipped over a whole glass of water and it started spilling over the edge of the table into a socket. Of course, there's an electrical socket immediately underneath the table. So it'll probably be some domestic related accident, like an electrocution or falling off a roof or out of a window, something like that. So, yeah.
Would you like to pick one, Mr. Bean? So you die like Mr. Bean.
Yes, I'll die silently from electrocution.
Okay. Do you worry about death?
Yeah, now I do. I've just turned 50, like, what is it now, 2 months
Get
ago?
Get the fuck out of
here. Yes, mate. It's happened.
Shut your face.
I know, we're all heading there. So.
Shut your 50-year-old face.
50 That's and 2 months. Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here.
Tell you what, though, it does make you think about life in a different way. I don't know if all 50-year-olds will concur, but I had this real sense of like, oh, this is, I mean, literally, this is not a drill. This is it now. And it's all from here on, it's about dying well, doing the things that you really want to do, not getting caught up with the things you don't want to do, losing the people that are no good in your life, surround yourself with good folks, eating well, you know, do you know what I mean? It's about dying well.
Oh my God, that hit me in the guts. You got me in the guts.
Well, you wait till you turn 50, it's going to be a sucker punch in the face.
Oh, God.
No, it's good. I'm enjoying it.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be that person, but you look in your 20s.
Oh, bless you.
So whatever you're doing is great.
Not electrocuting myself.
Yeah, hold off on that for a bit. I reckon you got a few more in you. What do you think happens when you die?
I saw this meme that I rather like that said something like, maybe the white light at the end of the tunnel is you coming out of someone's vagina.
Ah, wow.
Yeah.
I love it. Straight back round.
Maybe that's what it is.
I think that is what it is, but I do think you get a little gap in the middle.
Well, the gap, because it's outside of time, because obviously time is a man-made construct, the gap can be infinite. The gap can be, you could go somewhere else or whatever, but it's in, you're in infinite, no time, no space. And then there you are, pop out again. Oh, I've been born.
Someone I spoke to the other day said that you come back 3 times. And I was like, I don't think that's right. I think you come back a billion times or it's once.
Yeah, when you're
at three. Three seems like.
Yeah.
Well, I guess rule of three, maybe.
Well, three, it feels like if we're talking about the oneness of all things, then it's got to be none or one, really. Three feels like that belongs more in mythology rather than like...
Yeah, three seems like you haven't really experienced all the things in three.
I mean, you just keep looping round and maybe you can take a little break and, you know, I just want to be part of the oneness for a bit. And then, all right, I've had... That's enough. Yeah. And then you go back in again.
God, I'll tell you what, that's enough oneness for a bit. Can you send me back?
Exactly.
Oh, fuck it.
You're one down.
Yeah, all this oneness. Jesus. Give me some space, guys.
I want to be two.
I'm an introvert. Well, there is a gap and it's called heaven. You're in it. You're welcome. People are very excited to hear you.
Yeah.
See you and watch you. Oh. And they want to. It's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Probably. Pasta. Mm. Oh, and my puppy, of course.
Okay. It is filled with your puppy as if your puppy were made of pasta. So it's like a spaghetti puppy. Pretty cute.
Yeah.
Pretty cute, actually. Just the right temperature and solidity. Little pasta puppy.
Yeah.
Running around everywhere. Everyone's excited to see you. They want to talk about your life through film.
Oh.
First thing they ask you, it's odd. First thing they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing, Andy Osho?
I think it was some kind of Disney situation. And my my feeling is it was probably The Rescuers.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Lovely. Doesn't get talked about enough in the Disney chat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You go on your Disney WhatsApp thread, which obviously I'm on all of them.
Yeah.
Rescuers don't come up a lot.
No.
Good film.
I mean...
Tell me more.
I don't remember very much about it because, you know, I must have been really young. I don't even know when it came out. But I was thinking about, you know, when my mum used to take us to the pictures and that, because I wonder if it was just a little bit of a respite. She was a single mum, 3 kids. It's kind of like just quiet for 2 hours. And in those days, you know, there was the little short or whatever featurette that they'd have at the beginning. There'd be an intermission, ice creams and all the rest of it. And then the main event. So we could be there for half a day sort of thing. But
wow.
Yeah, I don't remember the film, but I remember being absolutely captivated by film. And I mean, later on, I remember seeing Annie and crying all the way home and being so confused that what had happened up there had affected my heart so much. I was trying to hide it. I remember like being in the car and my brothers were on it and I was like, like crying out of the side of the, oh my God, because I was so embarrassed because I was like, how could I have been affected by that?
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a really like bewildering moment of just like, why is this having this effect on me?
Wow. So there's three of you?
Yeah, so I've got two older brothers,
Oh, you're the youngest? Oh, wow.
I'm the youngest.
Where was this?
This would have been, I think it's called the Gemini or something like that, or Genesis in Bow. It was called something else, but there's a, yeah, you know, like between Stepney and like near Stepney
like
and Whitechapel.
Like the Mile End.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Now tell me this. What's the film that made you cry the most other than Annie? Annie is a stone cold classic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is there another? And did you get better at crying? Or are you still horrified and embarrassed by it?
Funny enough, the one that I would actually say is the film that's made me cry the most, I cried in the same way of almost like overwhelmed by my crying. And it was Moonlight.
Oh, man.
And
what a fucking film.
Right? And so I went, like, I got an invite to a screening. So I didn't really know what it was. I wasn't aware of Barry Jenkins's work. And so I went and was... I mean, you know, blown away doesn't even cover it. But then there was a Q&A after and everybody was there. Mahershala Ali and I think Naomi Harris was there and obviously Barry Jenkins. And I remember just looking up to try and see if I could balance the tears in my eyes because otherwise I was gone and I wanted to ask a question, but it would have been like, have you got tissue? So I couldn't. So, yeah, it was almost out of body experience. Yeah. How moved I was by that film, because for me, and I've listened to his films to be buried with.
It was top three.
Oh my God, such a great episode! And for me, Moonlight was about finding your home, and it wasn't about a place; it was about a person. And so eventually that character finds his home in the person that has been his home this whole time, but like he just didn't give himself permission to feel it, to go there or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, I don't know why that resonates so strongly for me, but it was just like, I'm done.
Oh, don't you?
Oh, okay, Dr. Goldstein.
Okay. No, I can't see why that would resonate with you, having heard your story. What a strange coincidence.
Yeah, okay, all right.
It's just a very good film.
It was just objectively quite enjoyable.
It's just a good film. What about being scared? What's the film that scared you the most?
Well, you kind of mentioned it already. I mean, apart from the obvious, I'm very susceptible. Absolutely terrified. Those Mises. Oh, man. Yeah, you mentioned it already. Well, I was going to say, I am susceptible. So pretty much every horror film, even if it's not meant to be a horror, I'm terrified. But one day, my agent messages me and says, oh, you know, this director wants you to come and read for his film. Here's a short that the film is based on. And he just sends me a YouTube link. So, and it's daytime, I'm at home. And I think nothing of it. Okay, yeah, good research. Have a look at the film before I go in. So I hit play and it's the short of Lights Out. And have you seen it?
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen the short.
The short. I've seen the short is so simple. It's basically this woman going to bed and she turns off the light in the hall. And then at the end, she just sees this figure. She turns the light back on. What the fuck was that? It's gone. She turns the light off again. The figure has moved closer. Because I'm so susceptible. And that is something that I do fear is like someone, something at the window or breaking in or something like that. I was done. And to me, like proportionately, that's the film that scared me the most, because for something that's 3 minutes long and I had to push the computer away to be able to watch it. As soon as I got what the conceit was, I was just like, nah. So that, in terms of proportion of, you know, length of movie to how scared I was.
Time for fear.
Hands down, it's Lights Out.
Well, great film.
It was great.
How was your meeting then when you went in? Were you like, fuck? Fuck you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was good. He's, very, David is very sort of chilled out. He's, But yeah, I got the job, so it must have gone all right.
You did very. That's where I was like, I got what? When I went to cinema, and I was so excited to see you.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Anyway. What is the film that you love? However, it's not critically acclaimed. Most people don't like it, but you love it and everyone's an idiot.
You know what? I think this is a really tricky question because I've got exceptional taste. And so for me, it usually goes the other way, is that there's films that everybody loves and I'm just like, I'm going to get it. Wolf of Wall Street. You know what I've noticed as well? I think it's films where I'm going to say it's like toxic masculinity basically going unchecked, because I think it's possible to make a moral film about an immoral person. But if you make an amoral film about an immoral person, it's just like, how is that a contribution? And it's, it's not my place to critique Scorsese, but I feel sometimes that certain films, like The Joker maybe, and where male characters have made choices and they go unchecked. Because you can have people, you can have characters do all those dreadful things, I believe. But the film standpoint, I resonate more if the film standpoint is, but that's wrong, obviously, right? Whereas in movies where that doesn't happen, I'm like, so what are you saying?
Yeah.
And so there's certain films that have been very popular that have been that sort of amoral film about an immoral character. Mm. And I've been like, guys, no, I'm sorry. I'm not into this one.
Do you know what? I'm with you. I think I'm almost completely with you, except for I went to see Wolf of Wall Street and I felt the same way you did. I was like, I don't like this film. This seems like a sort of bad intention film or something like that. And then maybe a year or two later, it was on TV and I just sort of started it. I sort of flicked onto it. And I thought, this film is fucking brilliant and I've totally misjudged it.
Mm.
It's so funny. And actually, I think it is all the things. It's just quite clever because it kind of goes presented without comment. But they're definitely the bad guys.
Right.
They're definitely the bad guys. And actually, the Kyle Chandler, who is the good guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually quite subtly done in the final moment with him having achieved what he set out to achieve, and yet he's just on a subway on his own in a shit, wearing shit clothes in a shit place because the system is rigged against the good people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was actually like, this film is, I think it's a brilliant film, but I really hated it the first time. I was really like, this seems like a morally objectionable. And then the second time I was like, oh no, it's very clever.
That's really interesting because I feel like, I sometimes don't want to believe that revisiting a film will have you see anything different.
Yeah.
And it's just totally not true, is it? You can go back to things and just go, well, how did I miss that? So yeah. I'd very much be open to revisiting it. But that was my experience at the time of watching it. It was just
I'm with you. It was also much funnier than I'd... Once I was on board with it, I was like, oh, this is a very, very funny film.
Uh-huh.
It is the thing of, I think he's kind of, in a way, he's going, I trust you. The audience, I'm not going to spell this out.
Yeah.
You tell me, you love this guy? You want to be like this guy? Okay.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's all the stuff.
Yeah. Here's it. Here it is, warts and all. Okay.
Interesting.
All right. I'll revisit. Because also, off the back of your podcast, I did actually, because Barry Jenkins's answer to this was Last Action Hero. So I went and, because I really liked that at the time that it came out.
Too.
And I was sort of, I was surprised that it didn't get any love. But yeah. I thought it was all right. I was all right to leave it in like 1995 or whenever it came out. I was like, okay, that belongs back there.
Okay, what about the film that you used to love but you've watched recently and you've thought, I don't like this anymore? Maybe you've changed.
Oh, do you know, this is going to be a controversial one, except for, I guess, fans of The Big Bang Theory. But like, I loved Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
But then, and I, you know, I sometimes have a little Sunday afternoon, like, you know, go and revisit a classic. And I watched it and I was not into it at all.
Oh God, I can't hear this. Actually.
I know, I'm so sorry. I can't even believe I'm saying it.
Why? I don't even want to know why. No, don't put it in my head.
I don't even think I can bear to say the words. How I was feeling. But don't they say on The Big Bang Theory that like there's like he doesn't advance the plot at all? Isn't there some like an episode where it's like this really controversial theory that one of them has that like Harrison Ford's character doesn't actually advance the plot at all? But that wasn't.
Yeah, he makes no difference to the in the end.
Yeah,
but that's quite fine. Dude.
Yeah, I just didn't. I'm gonna just say I didn't enjoy it. That's what it is.
Well, that's all we've got time for. Oh, thank you, Andy.
Man, and it was going so well.
It was going so well.
I know.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not because the film is good necessarily, mm-hmm. but the experience you had seeing it will always make it meaningful to you, Andy Osho.
Gosh, I could cry even just thinking of the moment. But it was probably Black Panther. Because. You know, there was a lot of conversation around when that movie came out about, you know, representation and mm-hmm. how much that matters. And also the fact that it's set on the continent of Africa, but also that it includes the diaspora in the storytelling, you know, like Killmonger's story is so vital. And then, so there was this one moment where it's quite early on in the film where Danai Gurira's character comes home and she says, we're home. And then just Wakanda just opens up. And it's just, that went into my soul, just that image. And just watching a movie where there's scenes where everybody's black. You know what I mean? In a blockbuster movie. Like, I think when you've been used to seeing yourself represented, the impact of Black Panther, I think probably is... it might be difficult to comprehend like how significant that was to see finally you or people that look like you represented in that way as all powerful and brilliant and smart and sexy and strong. Do you know what I mean? And having governance over their path and making decisions for themselves without any interference or all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that was very big. That was a very sort of powerful moment. And then that same day, so I was filming on something and we were on night shoot. So I got up at about midday and I was like, oh, what can I do in my day? We're going to be filming probably from about 6. So I was like, I went to see Black Panther. And then we had a call from production saying, oh, you know, tonight might be snowed off sort of thing. It might not happen. We might not be filming. So all the cast got together and we're like, oh, should we go and watch a film? Yeah, great. What do you want to watch? They went Shape of Water. I was like, girl, bye. I just went to watch Black Panther again.
You went twice in one day.
And I was just as happy and sort of immersed and just transported the second time as much as I was the first time.
That's wonderful.
It was just brilliant.
That's wonderful. It's a fucking great film and I love, the fact that it's also a huge fucking box office success is like, answers every question
exactly
you may have, exactly. You know what I mean? What is the film you most relate to, Andy Osho?
See, now we're not talking about as in a character because I don't feel like there's any specific character. Well, for me, it's The Matrix because... I like the way you're thinking, Neo. This isn't all there is there?
Oh, you are Neo.
Well, not quite. I mean, I like to think that I would be Niobe, but I think I'm probably Cypher, you know, the one that wants to get put back into the Matrix. You know, make me something important. like an actor.
No. You're on Live at the Apollo thinking, is this it?
Yeah.
There must be.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. Follow the white rabbit.
Fuck it. Yeah. Oh, mate.
I'm one of the few people that really love all three films. I mean, two, not so much, but like, I love them all. Four, we don't talk about, but I love them all.
Four is fascinating. Four I watched recently and was like, what? What a, wow.
In what way? Okay. What were you
just
thinking?
Just in like, in terms of, it's so crazy.
Right.
Like, as in, it's such a crazy starting point and the...
Yeah.
All the meta, it's all very meta. All the Warner Brothers talk within it. No, well done. It's great. Good luck to them all.
Well done. good work.
It's interesting. I did think, well, it's something.
You made some choices.
It's definitely, it's definitely not what I was expecting.
No.
Something's going on here.
Yeah.
What about sexiest? What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Andy O'Shea?
So I took this to be... not as in sex, but sexy. So, Out of Sight.
Ah, fucking correct answer. 100%
awesome.
Correct answer.
Yeah, I think that is like, that's the goal. If actors are looking for on-screen chemistry, head there. And if you get
in
halfway.
A boot with Clooney.
Yeah. There's just, I mean, obviously the filmmaking, because the mood of that movie is just, obviously lends itself to making it sexy. But those two actors in that situation, perfect.
Those two, the lighting and the soundtrack.
Mm, agreed.
And it's just fucking, it's really hot.
Yeah,
what a hot film.
Yeah.
Andy O'Shea, there's a, it's a subcategory. Now we're at the intellectual section of the show. Troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. A film you found arousing that you weren't sure that you should.
Yeah, I mean, I want to help out with this one. I want to be a useful
Thank
contributor.
You.
But there's nothing. I think that I have a response to the things that are meant. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing.
Right, you've got no.
Yeah, I don't watch The Rescuers and feel anything. Is right. Basically what I'm saying. Yeah.
You're saying never had a worrying wide-on. All the wide-ons were pure.
Yeah, they were. The source material was appropriate to the response. That's what I'm saying.
That's what you're sticking with. Okay. So Rescuers Down Under, nothing.
No, nothing. I couldn't even think, because you know, I mean, guys have got Jessica Rabbit, and I kind of get that. Do you know what I mean? But like, there isn't an equivalent for women. For a straight woman, there's not a
Robin Hood.
He-Man, Hercules, no.
Yeah.
No.
Unbelievable. What is objectively,
of course,
the greatest film of all time?
So hard.
Might not be your favorite.
No, it's not. And no. I've only watched it the once, but I'm going to say The Godfather 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why? Why are you throwing that out?
Well, I just remember finishing that film. It's just like, wow, that had subtitles and I really enjoyed it. That must be good. I mean, I went through this De Niro phase. And so obviously that was essential viewing. But I couldn't get on with the old, you know, cotton wool in the mouth and the Godfather thingy. That really took me out of it. But Godfather 2 was kind of, it just had every element of storytelling, but also performance in there that you would want. Mm. And I felt like, but weirdly, I didn't want to watch it again. And that's often the way, isn't it, with the really great films? Is like Citizen Kane. I we watched at college and have never felt inclined to revisit it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Casablanca, saw it again. We watched it at college. It's like, that was great, but I will watch, you know, Shawshank Redemption 10 times before I will ever watch that again.
I think it's usually like long, depressing ones that I think, yeah, we did that.
Yeah, we made it. At some point, there were two sets of footprints in the sand. But
what is the film that you could or have watch the most over and over again?
Oh, that's easy. That's Aliens.
Ah, oh, nice answer that hasn't come up in a
really?
Very long time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you're right. At school, everyone was watching Aliens all the time.
Well, I didn't. Again, it's kind of horror, essentially. So I couldn't have. But when I was doing my, I did an HND in like program TV and film and stuff. And the lecturer had us watch Aliens or maybe Alien. Anyway, I was hooked. So I don't know why. This is a perfect storm for me. This is everything. Yeah. I want Marines. There's jokes. There's guns. Aliens. It was brilliant. I just, and I kind of almost prefer Aliens to Alien. Yeah, I'm, you know, a James Cameron fan, I guess. And so, yeah, I've watched that so many times. I mean, literally, like, it would be a ritual. I'd go out on a Saturday night with my mates, and then we'd go around his house, and then we, on the Sunday, would probably watch either Terminator 2, most likely Aliens, and be mumbling incorrectly, usually, their lines along with them. I just love it.
That's great. That's great. Do you like your Way of Water? Are you happy with your Way of Water? James Cameron fan?
Yeah. I thought it was all right, actually. I didn't mind it at all. I mean, I don't think Avatar's not
put
the
that
one
on the poster
for me.
I didn't mind it at all.
Many stars.
Some stars.
It's not my favourite of his stuff. I really like Titanic. I think that's great. Mm. I like Aliens and T2. Terminator a bit, but Terminator feels very much like Alien in the sense of it's quite spare, whereas, you know, obviously Terminator 2 is all gunsy, much more gunsy.
Yeah.
Is that a word?
It is there.
Yeah.
It's very gunsy, actually, my weekend. We don't like to be negative, Andy. After all the spiritual work we've done.
I know.
But here we are. What's the worst film you ever saw?
I mean, there is every possibility, because I only watched it the once, there is every possibility that it's not as bad as I thought it was at the time, but there's a film called The Other Sister where it's I think it's sort of like maybe early 90s or late 80s, and it's, what's the actor's name? Giovanni Ribisi and Juliet.
Ribisi.
Yeah, and Juliette Lewis. And they're playing two people who fall in love, but they have learning difficulties. And so there's the issue for me.
Yes. And it's directed by Gary Marshall.
Yes.
So
they
both have learning difficulties in it.
Yeah.
Gary Marshall.
And actually, I watched the trailer recently to just because I was like, was it as offensive as I... And the joke wasn't on them. They weren't like, ha, 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 look at learning people with learning disabilities, but still to see two actors perform that, it was tricky. Like, it wouldn't be done now.
Yes,
but you have to sort of, I guess, give a little bit of latitude for what happened then. Not to say that it's okay, but like, it was a different time.
Yes. What's the film? Hang on. You used to be in comedy. You were a brilliant comedian, one of the greats. You remain as funny as ever. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Oh.
Might not be the funniest, but made you laugh the most.
Made me laugh the most. I think it's probably, apparently, I get that it's problematic for some folks now. Trading Places.
Ha.
Yeah.
Ha.
Yeah.
Why so?
Ha. Why funny or why problematic?
Yeah, why is that? I know why it's problematic. But
right.
Why?
Oh man, I just all the performances. Definitely that's it. That's what it is. Eddie Murphy at the top of his game, but also that pairing with Dan Aykroyd is perfect because him playing that sort of uptight, privileged. He has an existential crisis, essentially, a sort of a Buzz Lightyear realization. Oh, that's who I am, sort of thing. But yeah, the combination of them and the sort of skewering of that world is really, really well done. And you can feel. Well, I hope that it was as fun to film as it seems to have been. And like, you know what I mean? Like that it was alive. It was crackling with. Like you feel like, you know, the actors had latitude to sort of riff and find stuff. But again, it's one of those films, and I sort of wish we had more films like that, but we don't seem to. But like films that are really quotable.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like we used to quote Trading Places, like, yeah. As we just go, yeah. We don't really have films like that anymore. So that's another thing that's like a real sort of gem about it is that, like, just these these moments that that are just like cultural currency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that's because everything's so spread out now, or because we don't haven't had a big, broad mainstream comedy in the cinemas?
I think that because culturally we've moved and moved on, and things are a bit more subtle now, and because of the way that stuff gets lines get delivered, just not to be simplistic about it, but like it doesn't lend itself to being quotable. I feel like The Matrix was probably the last sort of great quotable film, which would have been what is that 99 that came out. So
fuck yeah.
Yeah. We're just it's a different era, a bit of subtlety and more nuance. So it doesn't sort of lend itself to eat that or whatever, or you know, all the things that people say in films, basically.
Yeah. Interesting. Andy Osho.
Yes, mate.
You've been beyond a delight. However, when you were getting ready to go out silently as Mr. Bean as you could be, you tripped over, you spilled a glass of water onto your desk. It rolled off the desk in a sort of cascade waterfall. You went to catch it. As you went to catch it, you reached under near the plug socket where the water landed. As you caught the glass, you went, "I've caught it." And then your finger caught the end of the electric socket and you were electrocuted. You were electrocuted. But that wasn't enough for you. So you pulled your hand away and you were like, "Oh God, I'm alive." And then you fell backwards down the stairs.
Oh my God, that sounds like me.
And then you got to support the stairs. You weren't dead yet, but you were very injured and you managed to crawl out the door into the road and your dog ran past and you called your dog's name, but your dog thought it was a different name and ran straight past. And then you were hit by a bus.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a shame. I was walking around with a coffin. You know what I'm like. I see this bus go past with you on the front of me. And I go, "Who's that?" That's Andy Osho. So I sort of run to the next stop and I go, "Sorry, it's a bus driver. You've got Andy Osho on the front of your bus." And I peel you off. It's a stink. Oh. You're all burned and mashed up. And I haven't got the dimensions of it right. So I say to the bus driver, "Have you got one of them like fire axes?" And he goes, "Yeah, yeah." And I start chopping you up, your bone. People on the bus are screaming. I go, "It's all right. I know her." And I'm chopping you up. And put all of you in the coffin, but there's more than I was expecting. And this coffin is absolutely rammed.
That's holiday
weight.
There's only
enough room. It's not you. It's the stuff you've accumulated on your fall down the stairs in the streets and the bus. Yeah. You've got bits of metal. Okay. Anyway, there's only enough room in this coffin for me to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. Every night is movie night.
Mm.
What film are you taking to show Pasta Puppies when it is your movie
Pasta
night?
Pasta Puppies!
Miss Andy Osho.
The Truman Show.
Incredible.
Yeah, man. Because, as well,
yes,
we can all laugh about how we know that this is all just a construct, but we're watching this movie about how it's all a construct on the other side of the construct. Yeah, that's what we do.
You are Neo.
There you go.
Andy Osho, is there anything you'd like to tell people to listen to, look out for, read?
Read.
Coming up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks. Sure. I have a new book out. So I have a new book out called Tough Crowd, which is out in the summer, but it's available to pre-order. Yes, it is. And it's a rom-com, I guess. Yeah, a rom-com about a comedian who, she's a sort of aspiring open mic comedian and she meets a guy, but it turns out he has kids and that turns out to be the tough crowd. Yeah. So it's about
cool.
So it's kind of like, it's a bit, like, obviously it's drawing on my experience from being a comedian, but it's kind of a little bit of a farewell for now to comedy, but also about, you know, the experience of dating somebody who's got kids. That's a whole thing.
Have you sold the film rights to this yet?
I have not. Working on it.
Okay, let's get that done.
Yeah, cool.
That sounds like a great book and a great film.
Oh, thanks, man.
Andy Osho, God, I like you.
Oh.
Thank you very much for this. This has been wonderful.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Have a lovely death. Good day to you.
Appreciate you.
Appreciate you. Goodbye. So that was episode 242. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra chat, secrets, videos, and uncut episode with Andy Osho.
Watch Ted Lasso and Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. And go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. Makes my neighbour Maureen cry. Everyone loves it. Thank you. Thank you so much to Andy for doing the show and for being so open. Go watch her shows, read her books, do everything you can. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics, and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for a brilliant episode with Mr. Adam Scott from Severance and Step Brothers. That guy. Amazing. So that is it for now. I hope you're all well. In the meantime, have a lovely week and please be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.